Everyone starts their morning a little differently. But for those that like to kick the day off with a delicious breakfast, there's McDonald's.
Here's to making your morning routine a little bit better. Enjoy one of your breakfast favorites with hash browns, like the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit for only $3. Single item at regular price cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Only select items at participating McDonald's.
Since the nuclear holocaust, 20 years have passed. But planet Earth has been reduced to a garbage-strewn radioactive desert, inhabited by humans devoid of all hope for a future.
In this sector, in exactly 30 seconds, the hunters and exterminators will begin total disinfestation.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Hey everybody, welcome back to what used to be Junk Food Cinema, but now is a giant smoldering hole in the earth where civilization once stood. No, this is still Junk Food Cinema.
It's still Junk Food Cinema.
But this is the post-apocalyptic version of Junk Food Cinema.
With After the Fall, New York.
After the fall,
how could you
is
lead
gone.
Me on?
Wow.
Come
wow.
on.
Wow.
We were doing After the Fall of New York the week that we lost Maurice White.
Trading in the UN for the Eurek.
Oh.
You ought to know by now.
And yet Maurice White is gone and Billy Joel still lives. Where yeah. is there fairness in this world?
There
Where is
no
the justice?
Dude, Alan Rickman's not here anymore. There is no, like, the world officially
no
sucks.
Bowie.
No Bowie. No Wait, Rickman.
This is the post-apocalypse.
It is. We've entered.
They're slowly taking out one by one all of our fucking heroes.
So we are living in the pop apocalypse, in the post apocalypse is exactly what's going on.
The post apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. I've coined a new term.
You can't even say it without the stutter because it's
We've been drinking all night. That's why
we have been dabbling in a little wine, my friend.
We have. So by the
we're
way,
we're at the Casa della Worm today.
We are indeed at Casa della Worm, and we have kind of started a new tradition that I like very much. Which is that we watch the movie together, and we drink while we're doing it, and then we immediately record this episode of Junk Food Cinema, which is the cult film exploitation film podcast here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me, you've already heard his dulcet tones, is former critic, current novelist, current screenwriter, Marvel Dr. Strangepool.
Dr. Strangepool.
Dr. Strangepool.
Dr. Strangelove. Writer of Dr. Strangelove.
Writer of Dr. Strange and Deadpool and Dr. Strangelove from Marvel.
I've had nothing to do with Deadpool.
They don't
and
know
I'm
that.
Not saying that
Shh.
To be mean.
They don't know that.
I'm not taking credit for that. I hear it's quite good and I'm not gonna fucking steal anybody's fucking thunder.
Guys, we are here to talk about Deadpool. Oh wait, no we're not because
no,
everybody's
we're here
be
to talk
that.
About a movie so obscure. We had to watch it at my house
yeah.
on our working VHS player
yeah.
on VHS that I have stuck away in my closet after the fall of New York.
How do we get into Manhattan?
Getting in will be easy. It's getting out that's impossible.
This is a movie. By the way, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. This is a movie.
You found us already. You don't need to know where else to find us.
You don't need a watch to know what time it is, folks. That's all I'm saying.
You can tell we've been drinking, can't you?
We have been drinking.
You're
a
like,
bit.
Wow, what have you been drinking?
Gasoline, paint varnish, and something that resembles
we've been drinking South African wine is
yeah.
what we've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell the truth.
Tastes like apartheid.
tastes like
delicious, delicious apartheid.
I feel like no matter what we say for the rest of the episode, the one pull quote for this show is going to be "taste like apartheid."
We're doing an episode on After the Fall of New York, a movie that developed, that caused a small incendiary flame to burst up in you that created a passion for Italian knockoff films, and it was
that's a very real genre, folks.
It is. It not only is it. It was something that I threw on expecting everyone to leave, but I was like, fuck it. We were having one of our nights where we had about 20 people over to watch a bunch of movies. I promised everyone that I was going to program Death Race 2000 and Death Race, neither of which almost anyone had seen. And I was like, we're going to watch these. These are legitimately good films. You guys are going to love them. Everybody was skeptical, but they're like, all right, we'll give it a shot. Fell in love with them. As you guys last week discovered, if you have still not watched Death Race or Death Race 2000, go and watch those immediately. But the midnight movie I showed that night, 7 people stuck around. Out of the 20 people, 7 people stuck around. You were one of them. Yeah. I showed on VHS this movie that I remembered from my childhood and had found on VHS, but knew very little about.
Right.
I just threw it on because I was like, I know that this has something in common with Death Race, and it's very post-apocalyptic, and fuck it. I want to keep drinking with my buddies after midnight. So the midnight movie was After the Fall of New York, an Italian knockoff movie of a film whose name we will not mention.
No, we're not going to tell you what movie this is ripping.
You're going to have to figure out what After the Fall of New York is a blatant, unrepentant ripoff of.
This is the thing we need to delve into, because this is a subgenre, and this is what I am intrigued so much by: the weird things that should not be in film. That is like one of the things I gravitate toward is things that should not be. It's the reason that I am so obsessed with things like the Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise, because that is a thing that should not be. It's the same reason that I am obsessed with the idea of a subgenre cropping up entirely out of the Italian film community existing in the 80s. Seemingly, but for no reason than to rip off whatever was popular in American cinemas at the time.
Part of the reason that I mentioned this last week, and some of you are like, yes, Cargill, we know this movie's important to Brian and you.
It is.
Part of the reason this whole show exists is this movie.
Yeah.
Because when I showed this movie, you know, everybody was laughing and having a good time and enjoying this terrible 80s knockoff that we love, except for Brian, who is confused. And you were so baffled. Confused. You were baffled. And the look on your face was amazing, because you could not understand why this movie that was blatantly ripping off a movie that you knew very well, that we're not going to mention my name, that you were like, wait, and like literally they were hitting points and you're like, wait, this movie is clearly ripping this off. And I'm like, yeah, it's an Italian knockoff. And you're like, what? And I'm like, have you never seen an Italian knockoff? And you're like, why were the Italians knocking things off? And I'm like, we need to have a talk.
See, look, I was young. I was naive. Yes. I still believed in copyright laws. And what I didn't understand is that international copyright meant dick to the Italians in the 80s.
Fuck copyright.
I'm sorry, it meant dice to them in the 80s.
The 70s and 80s, it meant nothing. And the minute you wrapped your head around that, you dove into Italian knockoffs like no one I've known. Like, there's nobody I know that knows more about Italian knockoffs than you.
And
like,
that's not something I would ever brag about.
It's something you except on this show.
Yes, because if it were not for this podcast, I would never bring that up.
You became the person that whenever I'm wondering about an Italian knockoff, you're the person I call. Yeah. And I love that you fell so in love with it, and you know deep, deep down some of the nitty-gritty nastiness of this subculture, and we're going back to where that love began with this film, which knocks off a film we both love and may or may not have talked about in the past recently, but will not mention by name.
This movie is ground
this movie,
zero.
After the Fall of New York.
Yeah, it's ground zero for my love of this franchise, which I feel like is a term I shouldn't use considering this called After the Fall of New York, but this movie is ground zero for my love.
What could it be ripping off? I don't know.
It's hard to say. It really is. I thought this genre was dead. Apparently, it's not.
I mean, we should talk about what this movie is about.
We should
at some point.
And here's the best part of that is that you don't have to try very hard to know what this movie is about, because there is a narrator While a quote-unquote trumpet is playing at the beginning of this film, over shots of what is obviously not a model at all.
The beauty, yes, but let's, okay, let's start with just how much of a knockoff this movie is.
Yeah.
There's a guy playing a trumpet at the beginning, and even he is fucking dubbed.
Yes.
They fucking play a trumpet moog. Like, they've literally got a guy on a keyboard playing trumpet sounds to get the sound out of the trumpet. Like, once you see this, you know exactly what kind of movie you're in for, because nothing, nothing is going to be top-notch in this movie. And let's lay out from the beginning, this is not a good movie.
No, 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 no. That's the thing, is we really need to hit on this. This is a podcast that has eschewed irony at every possible opportunity. That's not what we're about. We're not here to make fun of movies that are bad. We are here to celebrate those movies that we love, regardless of whether they hit all the criteria for being a, according to Hoyle, masterpiece.
And this movie, we love, despite the fact that so much about it goes terribly wrong.
Just so bad.
It goes so wrong in all the best ways that even at the end of having just watched this movie, I've seen this movie a dozen times now. I still don't believe this movie exists.
Like, you've seen it with your eyes, but
it's
still...
I've seen it. I can hold the VHS in my hand. Speaking of which, you know, just a little aside, it's coming out on DVD shortly.
Oh, Blu-ray.
Blu-ray. We found out.
If ever a film was requiring of high-def treatment to really celebrate it correctly.
Maybe the plot is hiding in the parts that have been cut out in full frame.
There is a moment. I will say this. There is a moment of this film that perplexed me something awful when we saw it tonight that I think will be cleared up when we see it on Blu-ray.
And we'll get there.
We will get there.
We will get there. But yeah, no, this is a movie that you're going to hear us talk about it, and it's almost going to sound like a hoax.
It really is. You're going to think
First of all, why would you talk about this movie? And second of all, why would you like this movie? And third of all, why would anybody make this movie?
Yeah.
And yet you'll, when this movie comes out on Blu-ray, or if you track this down on YouTube or however you go about it, because we had to hang out together and watch it on fucking VHS, which was given to me by a buddy years ago, who was like, I think you would appreciate this. And I'm like, this is after the fall of New York.
The best part of this is that we both own this movie on VHS, the exact same VHS release of this movie.
We do.
It's just that only one of us has, at this point, a functioning VCR.
I have two. I bought two VCRs from my neighbor 10 years ago, who's like, we have VCRs and we're never going to use them. $10. And I was like, done.
Yeah.
Backup VCRs are great. And like, what are you going to use backup VCRs for? It's like, just trust me. Yeah. In the future, this $10 is going to pay off.
Totally.
And sure enough, here we are in 2016. In 2016, after the fall of VHS,
just
two men stand with a VHS to watch one movie that will be released on Blu-ray in like 2 months.
I won't be standing much longer if we keep consuming alcohol the way we're doing. But I will say this, we are just 3 years shy of this film's proposed apocalypse, and that is one of my
2019.
Favorite. That is one of my favorite things about these movies.
22 years after the movie it's ripping off that we will not name.
We shall not mention.
We shall not mention the movie that after the fall of New York rips off.
New York.
See, now you're hearing it in your head.
Every time.
How could you lead me on?
We're doing a terrible job of describing the plot of this movie. So
we have not yet begun
to describe
the plot of this movie.
Let me backtrack a little bit. So,
does it involve New York?
It does. So Sean Schmarpenter is playing his Moog trumpet while a narrator tells you that...
One of the only two black characters in the movie.
One of the only two black characters in the movie. Tells you that there has been this great war.
That's how you know it's really not shot in New York.
Well, here's the thing, and it's... As I further explain the plot to you, there's going to be a certain point where you go, if that's true, why are there only two black guys in the whole movie? There is no answer, I'm sorry.
We have no answers.
But there has been a nuclear war, and it has broken the planet into essentially two factions.
Well...
Which is the
that is incorrect.
No, it's not. The Pan-American Federation...
Yes.
Which is essentially the western hemisphere of the planet, or the western side of the planet.
And then the Urax.
And then the Urax, which is a combination of Europe, Asia, and Africa.
Who got together and then caused the nuclear war.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay, I guess that part is true. So
fucking Europe, Asia, and Africa all get together and decide they have to nuke the shit out of it.
I just want to point out again, a third of that equation is Africa, and there are still only two black guys in this entire movie.
Yeah, because all the guys of the Urax are white.
Evidently, the only part of Africa that that survived
and
was
beautiful Italian women
was Copenhagen. So as we drink our South African wine here, which I'm starting to think might be the perfect junk food pairing to this movie,
I kind of think that's not wrong.
So what happens is, as a result of all this warfare, a lot of things have happened. There is created mutant races.
Yep,
it has rendered a large portion, almost the entirety of the planet. In fact, most of people assume that the entirety of the planet is now completely infertile.
Yes.
Which means we have put a ticking clock on the human race.
Which means that not only is this a knockoff of a movie we won't name, but Children of Men is a knockoff of this movie.
Oh, shit, yo.
What?
Wow. We are lobbing
this movie is
some
very
accusations
Children of Men
we cannot back up.
Because this is an important plot point, folks. Yeah, pay attention to this plot point, because this is the core of our fucking movie.
So it turns out that the Pan-American Federation finds out that there is a fertile female in the once great city of New York that is now basically a completely decimated war zone controlled by
the Urax. Now, how did they figure that out? They're going to wave their hands and say, in our memory banks, we did some math, and it turns out there must be one there.
They said the robots found out about it. They have robots inside of New York that have somehow found out that there is a fertile
and that they
woman.
Did the math in their memory banks.
Look, if science is important to you, then you should tune out right now.
Right now.
Because the science of this movie is dubious, to say the least.
Did you notice that we're talking about the science of this movie and my dog is giving us the weirdest fucking look?
Because your dog understands science better than this movie does.
He really does.
That's
Gosper
the reason.
Really, yeah. Gets science better than this movie.
So once they find out there is one fertile female left inside of New York, they send a former soldier of theirs in. They task him. He is now living as a I want to say a mercenary. He's
a mullet wearing Mad Max.
Yeah.
Someone we won't name knockoff.
Yeah. Played by Michael Sopcu, who, as Mystery Science Theater once put it so perfectly, looks like his name is spelled sideways. Because his name is Sopcu, so it really does look like he has a sideways last name.
He's, you know, and the weird thing about him, only in four movies.
That's not weird at all if you watch this film. That's completely understandable.
And the fact that there is a gentleman whose name is Michael Sopcu, who has not only been mentioned by us, but by the greatness that is Mystery Science Theater 3000, and yet only made four films.
Yeah.
How amazing must a man be to achieve such greatness?
So he's brought in... Okay, so what he's participating in at the beginning of this film, as Cargill mentioned, is sort of a mashup, or I guess in this case a crash-up, of George Miller and Death Race 2000.
Yeah.
Except it's not really a death race. It's more of a death derby.
It is, but it's very, very death race. Like, it, again, here's a point that you didn't make last week that you made tonight.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, Death Race, despite being a death race, the people aren't trying to kill each other.
Oh, Death Race 2000. Yeah, they're not trying to kill each other.
In Death Race 2000. But in Death Race, they are trying to kill each
other. That's the whole point of it. And in fact, in Death Race 2000, they freak out when one of the drivers is killed by an outside. Like, oh my God, drivers can die? We didn't even think that was possible. Like, they're actually kind of prima donnas. And the only people that they're comfortable with murdering are the people on the street. And the whole point is to win the race. Whereas Death Race, the remake, it becomes entirely about killing each other.
Yeah.
Which is what is happening at the beginning of this movie.
And this movie's very Death Race meets George Miller. Like,
In fact, the guy who's hosting it, who looks like an anorexic version of Jim Broadbent from Moulin Rouge, says that the winner is the person who gets to this pole first, but only if every other competitor is dead. So I was like, so really the pole is like the quaffle, but killing the other people
it's
is
like the
snitch.
Golden snitch.
Killing everyone else is the snitch. It really doesn't matter what happens with the pole,
yeah,
as like long the as
points,
the snitch is satisfied.
The points don't get, we don't exactly. give a shit about the points. Did you catch the golden snitch? Because you swallowed
why
that.
Why would you bother? Why would you bother going for the quaffle and all that bullshit if snatching the snitch gets you that many points and ends the game immediately? Why does anyone bother with the quaffle at all?
Because that one way question. Or another, it ends with a robot clown.
Oh my God. Okay.
Wearing an eyeball.
Here's, you guys. This movie.
This movie in the first 10 minutes is going to win you over.
Is fucking insane.
Let me tell you about the first 10 minutes.
Tell us about the first 10 minutes.
The first 10 minutes has men in football helmets on horseback. Yep,
that's true.
It has flamethrowers.
Because it isn't. This is something that you guys need to understand. If you are not familiar with the genre of Italian post-apocalyptic knockoffs, they love them some flamethrowers.
They have flamethrowers. They've got a dilapidated New York. They've got themselves an oil refinery. They've got themselves a George Miller knockoff Death Race that doesn't make any goddamn sense in the world.
Hey, y'all, they got a tank.
They've got a robot clown with an eyeball on her head giving out the prize to the Death Race, which is...
Gold coins, which gold, are right, also well, a license to kill.
Those gold coins are licenses to kill, which legally allow you to kill people and take their shit.
Which really makes the game Super Mario Brothers make a lot more sense, because every time he smashes a turtle, he takes a coin. Well, that was his license to kill that turtle, I suppose.
And then it also happens to give him a girl who becomes his sex slave.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then some guys from the Air Force show up.
Guys, if you want to have nightmares for the rest of your born days, watch the opening scene where our hero, by the way, whose name is Parsival, win this competition, and the robot clown, who is definitely played by an actress and not a puppet or prosthetic, like, it's just an actress pretending
it's
to be a robot.
It's just an actress moving around like a robot
and saying,
"You cannot see me because this is a podcast, and yet you see in your mind exactly how I'm moving.
To the victor goes long life and happiness. To the victor goes long life and," like, 15 times.
Yeah.
And it is horrifying. Horrifying.
It is a boner killer.
And we are, guys, we are 20 minutes into the show. We're only 2 minutes into the goddamn movie.
This is how much we love this movie.
It is insane. So they snatch up our hero Parsival and they say, "You've got to go and you've got to say." His reward, by the way, his reward. You might remember this other movie we're talking about that this movie rips off that we're not going to mention.
That we're not going to name.
No. In that movie, our hero is offered his freedom. He's going to jail. He's offered his freedom, a real thing to fight for. In this movie, if he succeeds in his mission, he is going to be put, I shit you not, on a rocket ship to take him to a planet he's never heard of that, according to our Lee Van Cleef character in this movie. Our It's our Lee Van Cleef.
I know we said we weren't going to say him the name, but I think mentioning actors is also off the... That's a little cheating.
I'm just saying.
I mean, these people should have to work to understand what After the Fall of New York is ripping off.
You're right. So our Lee Van Cleef antecedent tells fake Pliskin that he is going to
get... You know what? I take that back. Fake Pliskin? That just earned the... That is Michael Sopcich's Percival's name now.
So fake Pliskin...
I can't believe I've never, after all these years of loving this movie, fake Pliskin never come to...
It's the wine. I blame the wine. So fake Pliskin is told that he's going to be put on a rocket ship and sent to one of the planets in the Alpha Centauri region that... I'm not making
No, there's several planets.
Yeah, one of the planets.
We just know that there's several planets that could support life.
Could.
So we're going to send a ship out there and you could be on it.
The principal word there is could. So I'm watching this going, has anyone actually gone to these planets and colonized them? Or are you just going to put this kind of rocket ship and go, good fucking luck?
We're leaving this planet because now this is, to be fair, as fucked up and stupid as that idea is.
Yes, it is.
We kind of fucked up the planet, nuked it to oblivion, sure. And it is a total fucking shithole. There is a point when you leave New York and you're still in the fucking desert with mountains.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, we fucked up this planet so bad, you can see the fucking mountains from here.
By the way, this is also a movie that postulates a future where New York is a 2 to 3 hour motorcycle ride away from Alaska. So
I would say it's a time cut away from Alaska because they're just like, you need to get into New York, but getting in New York isn't as easy as you think it is.
But
how easy is it? Well, it's going to be a montage of you riding motorcycles with two guys for like 30 seconds, and then you're going to get outside of New York and have to walk into some sewers.
But if you have a space dirigible that takes you from Nevada to Alaska in the first place, why is that same zero gravity Zeppelin not taking you to New York.
Let's pretend that there aren't models in this movie on strings that are supposed to be spaceships.
This movie would make James
Cameron
cry.
Models on strings supposed to be spaceships in this movie. This is part of why we love this film.
Yes,
because
it's like chasing someone down a rabbit hole of lunacy.
It's This movie was made 6 years after Star Wars.
Yes.
6 years. It came out the same year as Return of the fucking Jedi, and it's got fucking plastic models on strings.
It is insane.
Amazing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And so we get to New York, and we are introduced to a number, like, very much like the film We Shall Not Name.
The film that is not going to be named in this episode at all.
No, so Fake Plissken and his two companions.
After the fall of New York.
Yes, his two companions, hey, I'm not Elias Koteas, and hey, I'm totally not a cyborg.
I'm totally not a cyborg. I am just a guy wearing an eye patch, because we had to have an eye patch in this movie, who happens to be known as the strongest man on Earth.
And what is his name in this movie? And this character who is not purported to be a cyborg, cyborgs exist
in
this movie?
At this point in this movie, we've been explained that there are cyborgs. They are all dead. They were all fiercely loyal, and
that
they were terrible.
And our hero doesn't trust cyborgs.
Our hero doesn't trust cyborgs, so and there's a gentleman character with an eye patch who is the strongest man on Earth named Ratchet.
Yeah.
Yes. Definitely not a cyborg, and he's definitely not a cyborg for the rest of the film, folks. So you watch this movie, don't think that he's a cyborg, because he's totally not a cyborg, and that's totally not a third act twist that happens.
But I will say this for the movie. There are two characters joining our hero. One has a metal hook for a hand, and one is a cyborg. And it's not the order you think that should be.
Exactly. And not only that, there's this amazing moment where we see the guy with the hook for a hand, and we meet him, and his name is mentioned once, and only once. He's just the guy with the hook for a hand, in which they, we look at him, and they go, he's got more of a reason to hate the Urex than anybody.
Stop. And cut to immediately to his hand, from what he's saying.
Immediately to his hand. We look at his hand. So we're like, oh. And then he goes, they killed his family and made him watch.
But they never explained the goddamn
hand
on his hand.
Hand is no reason. They just killed his family and made him watch. So the only thing that makes sense to me, this movie.
I'm glad something does.
Now, no. And we've talked about this. This movie rips off so many films.
So many.
The reason why we love this film so much is how shameless it is, and how badly it rips off certain films, especially a certain film that will not be named, despite the fact that this movie's called After the Fall of New York. I can't help but think that somebody said, this is our sci-fi version of the guy from Rolling Thunder.
Yeah.
Because they killed his family and made him watch, and then put his hand in a garbage disposal and chopped his hand off, and then he totally killed those guys, and now he lives in a sci-fi future where he has a robotic hand.
Yes.
And happens to have a complete map of New York City in his head.
Major Charles Rainiti decides that they do cut to his hand, and then they don't explain at all.
Nothing at all. Just they killed his family. And this is part of the magic of this movie, because this movie seems to make sense in Italian and just doesn't seem to make much sense in English.
No.
And yet it's kind of fucking awesome in English.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And this is not at all ripping off Fuga da New York. Not at all.
2019 Fuga New York.
But before we get any further into the plot, I do want to kind of bring that up. Is that,
or is it 1997?
And that's what I. It's exactly
1997 Fuga da New York.
Exactly.
I guess maybe that's cheating enough that most of our listenership doesn't speak Italian, so they don't know what we're necessarily mentioning that this is ripping off.
Sì, prego.
Prego.
So the thing that is interesting most about this movie to me is that while it is a ripoff of so many other better films, it acknowledges in the fact that it starts its movie out with a year. And every one of these films, every one of these Italian post-apocalyptic films starts with a year in which they are supposing the world will end. And you can actually almost track the entire course of the last, like the year we're living in, go back 10 years, go forward 10 years. There is a movie that Italy made that will presuppose
2008, the Norte de Obama.
Exactly. They will all presuppose that was the end of the world. And what I love about that is that it seems to be built off of the fact that Escape from New someplace.
Whoa!
Escape from New Amsterdam.
Take a drink. That was the punishment. That was the drinking game. You could not get through this. You couldn't get a half an hour into this fucking thing without dropping it.
Julio Carpintero's Escape from New Amsterdam was in Italy called 1997 Fuga de New York. So in other words, all of these movies are treading upon the popularity of the Italian title of the movie that this is ripping off.
Yes. So
it's a ripoff of a ripoff.
Yes. That's
it's ripoffception.
This movie is so important in the oeuvre of Italian knockoffs because...
Can you use the word oeuvre when you're talking about an Italian film?
You sure can.
Okay,
because
good.
This
good.
Isn't the worst Italian knockoff in the world.
No,
this
not.
Is kind of one of the most amazing Italian knockoffs in the world.
That is part of this.
It's not... Yeah, no. Like, if you want to talk about terrible Italian knockoffs, let's talk about Patrick 2. Let's talk about fucking
let's
unwatchable.
Let's talk about Terminators of the Year... Exterminators of the Year 3000.
Yes. Yeah, ooh. well... That has some magic to it. It's not
some,
as bad as Patrick
some, but
two.
It is few and miles between.
Yes, yes, this is true. But this is a movie that so lovingly, painstakingly rips off its original source material and tries to make a good movie out of being a ripoff.
Yeah.
It tries to do something original with every movie it rips off.
Yeah.
It doesn't just rip off a movie that I'm not going to name, but apparently somebody else couldn't go 30 fucking minutes without fucking naming.
Yes. Evacuate New Amsterdam.
Yes, Evacuate New Amsterdam.
Sure.
It rips off oddball movies that you're like, why the fuck are you ripping off Planet of the Apes? Like, where
no,
do the
why
fucking
are they,
ape characters
why
come from?
Why are they ripping off Planet of the Apes? Why is there a character called Big Ape?
Big Ape, who's really Rape Ape.
Rape Ape. Who is
Which
played,
when we get into the third act, you'll understand Rape Ape.
Who, thank God you'll finally understand
Rape Ape.
Your life
rape
will
ape.
Be more complete.
Look, I made the pun before your brain got
yeah,
there,
me
and
too.
You were very angry about
I was,
it.
Because I was so close in that scene. Anyway, we'll get there. But there's my favorite part about that is that Big Ape is played by an actor, quote unquote, named George Eastman.
George Eastman.
And I saw that come up on the screen and I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
That's a pseudonym. And you're like, what do you mean? I'm like, anyone whose name in the credits does not end in a vowel is using a goddamn pseudonym.
And that's really, really, you know,
it's true.
Sop Q is the only one not using a pseudonym.
So, Sop Q sounds like something you say when you sneeze, and apparently it's also this actor's name. So we're moving through the, and this is the great part. This is
okay,
the really fun part of watching this movie.
Let me explain for 1 second. There's a reason why this is one of the most insane junk food cinemas you've ever listened to. This is one of the most insane movies junk food cinema has ever covered.
It's so hard to get my head around it.
This movie should not exist.
No, it shouldn't.
It really... There are moments in this movie so deliberately ripped off from its source material. So deliberately, like, you're fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, it's at moments you're like, okay, it's just an Italian knockoff that's just ripping off this movie that Cargill refuses to name. It's not really that because it's not like fake Pliskin is wearing an eye patch. And it's not like they open with a scene. Because, see, here's the difference. See, in the original, the movie that they were knocking off, the Curiel's not going to name.
Yeah.
The main character, he is supposedly dead, and everyone thinks he's dead, but he's still actually alive. And everyone's like, I thought you were dead. And he's not.
He's
in
not.
This movie, that character thinks the guy that brought him in for the mission was dead.
Yes.
And says, I thought you were dead. No, I'm not dead. Oh, okay. Like, this movie, at moments, you're just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
Or the
me.
Fact that our hero isn't the one wearing the eye patch. Like, there's a lot of there's a lot of deliberate workarounds.
Yes. Yeah, no. A fake Pliskin doesn't wear an eye patch. No, Ratchet. Not a cyborg, wears an eye patch.
Hey, I'm not a cyborg, by the way, guys.
He's definitely not a cyborg, and that's definitely not a thing throughout the entire movie.
I love that it's one of those rare instances in a film where we are so many steps ahead of the characters in the movie that it might as well be Hitchcock. Like, they give us so many blatant hints that this character is a cyborg that we're just like, come on, dude, can you
come
really
on.
Not figure this out?
You're a cyborg.
Yeah.
Come on, why hasn't Michael Sopcu figured out you're a cyborg? Not a cyborg.
I'm not a cyborg.
He's not a cyborg.
But the,
that's totally not a third act reveal.
The fun of a movie like this is twofold. One, it's in finding all of the analogs to the movies that it's ripping off, to finding all of the standard bearers, all of the avatars of the films that you love that have made their way into this film.
And there are a lot.
And there are so many. But then the other thing is, like, literally, it is so bizarre. It is so weird. It so should not exist on this planet that you can't look away from it.
No.
You have to follow, like I said, down the rabbit hole of lunacy, and you want to see where it goes. You are compelled to see how this insane play is going to finish.
And it's an insane play without subtlety.
No subtlety whatsoever.
The robot, the cyborg, not a robot, because the robot, robots, by the way, were a product of, the evil guys.
Yeah.
Cyborgs are the product of our evil guys. So, the Pan Americans had the cyborgs. So then we have a character we're going to come to shortly in the narrative. We haven't even gotten through the first act yet.
Oh, no. Nor, I think, will we.
I don't think describing this film is going to do much good. But we get to a character who Michael Sopcu saves.
Mm-hmm.
He happens to be a little person.
Yeah. In fact, when he is discovered, all the characters chasing him think he's, oh, there goes a little boy.
They think he's a little boy. He's a little person.
And when it's discovered that he's not, Michael Sopcu has to save him and say the most insane thing any actor has ever had to say in a film, which is, it's not his fault he's not a child. Which is like, I never thought that would be something anyone would have to defend someone for.
So what is the name of this character in the movie?
Oh, I believe you're referring to Shorty.
Shorty.
Yes, because subtlety runs
Shorty,
rampant.
Shorty, the Tyrion Lannister of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also is kind of the most noble and awesome character of this
movie.
I
like him more than any character. See, here's the whole thing. The problem I have with Parsifal, with our hero, with Fake Plissken, is that they understood, the Italians understood that what we liked about the actual character, antecedent, is that he had no fucks to give. Fine.
Zero fucks to give.
I don't give a fuck about your president.
I don't give a fuck about this. I don't give a fuck about that. I just, in the knockoff movie, I'm going to give a fuck about everything, but I'm going to make that face that makes it look like I don't give a fuck about anything.
The problem is that I'm not even really sure. Like, they've amplified that fucklessness to 11.
Fucklessness. You just invented a word,
my friend. You're welcome, Internet. To 11, to the point that I'm like, if he cares that little about what is going on, we have no reason to care whether he succeeds. At least in the film this is ripping off, our hero had to succeed in order to gain his own freedom. He had a personal vested interest, an agenda in why this needed to work. In this movie, he is tortured, quote unquote, by a woman making out with him, to which he immediately gives up the entire plan. Like, oh, okay, yeah, here's why I'm here.
See, okay, we've gotten to that point.
Yeah.
There's a point where they get captured, and they get captured trying to save Shorty, which the only reason they get captured is because our character does something noble despite him being a knockoff, despite him being Fake Plissken.
But despite him being all of the fuckless.
He doesn't care about anything except that he cares about random people that he sees along his adventures. And this will be a hallmark of who Fake Plissken is. Percival is a character who doesn't care about anyone. I don't give a shit about anyone except everyone I run across. Like, I just want a whore in a death competition, and I'm going to give her all of my credits so that
she can...
Spend
all of my licenses to kill so she can ride away.
So she can ride away on a horse,
because
that's just who I am. I'm Fake Plissken. And there's a little person being chased by a bunch of evil mutants in the underground. I'm totally going to rescue him and then get captured by the bad guys, because I'm Fake Plissken.
Right.
And then when I'm being tortured, while my buddy is actually being tortured...
We need to talk about the disparity of torture here, because our hero is being quote-unquote tortured. A woman walks in, makes
out
with him. Hold
on. Before this, let us refer to the fact that one of the characters in the movie, who we briefly referred to as the guy with the brain of New York City in him.
Oh, that's correct. Yeah.
The guy whose name is mentioned once, who we don't give a shit about, because his whole job in the movie is that he just knows he has the New York in his brain and has a cyborg claw for a hand. He is actually, he's talked to like a human being by a bald guy who's like, hey, look, just tell me why you're here.
The Urak version of Vin Diesel.
Yes, he's the Urak Vin Diesel, and he's just kind of like, hey, guys, look, they sent you on this mission. I'm sure it sucks. If you tell us what it is, we'll totally like let you off because we don't give a shit about you guys. We just care about this is like the, you know, Pan American thing reformed. Because if it is, that's cool. We just hate them. Yeah. So just tell us what's up and we'll totally like let you go. And he's like, fuck you. Fuck you. And like, oh, okay. Well, I'm going to kind of talk to you nicely again. And then he's like, fuck you. I'm going to take out your eyes. And then that dude gets put in this machine that is just fucking awful while the guy whose eyes he took out is like sitting there getting reconstructive eye surgery.
The guy who was blinded by science.
Michael Sopcu. I'm going to let you enjoy that because people are laughing right now because that's welcome. I respect that joke. Michael Sopcu, on the other hand, is interrogated by the Asia Argento of Italian torture. And it's just this beautiful woman who just kind of makes out with him and is just like, hey, I'm totally going to make out with you. And if you tell me what the Pan-American Alliance is up to, I'm totally going to fuck you. And he's like, this is what they're up to right now.
And my favorite part of that is that scene happens before the guy with the map of New York in his head is tortured and like legitimately tortured. So in other words, our quote unquote hero gives up the information for a kiss. And meanwhile, the character who's actually like refusing to give up the information is tortured to a degree that even though they already have the information they're looking for, they still fucking torture him.
They torture the shit out of him.
But at that point, for no reason, because they have already obtained from fake Bliskin, the person who holds up the worst ever under any sort of interrogation, which apparently includes a beautiful woman laying her lips on top of his and dragging them like their curtains blowing in the wind over other curtains. It's not even really an effective making out scene. It's kind of uncomfortable. But that guy holds up The guy who's actually being tortured even after the information has already been given holds up better under torture than our quote-unquote hero in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, he absolutely. Absolutely. See, you're giving me this great look right now like, wow, you just jumped back in there after leaving the room, grabbing a bottle of wine.
I watched you like dart across the room for this wine bottle like you were Speedy Gonzalez. It was pretty hilarious.
See, and that's the moment where the audience is like, he wasn't kidding. Cargill literally went over and got another bottle of wine.
No, we are drinking. I feel like we've established that. So let's jump ahead a little bit to when we actually find out who the last fertile woman is.
Well, see, we haven't even mentioned that yet.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Let us mention the fact that the plot of this movie. The reason why the plot, and we use that word very loosely. Very loosely, is fake Bliskin is sent in to New York to retrieve the last fertile woman on Earth.
Yeah.
And
so they can harvest her eggs and make 500 uncontaminated. Because that's the thing, too, is there's a big theme in this movie that everything's been contaminated by the nuclear war. The water that people drink and the sterility.
Uteruses.
But, I mean, people in general are just infected by this nuclear radiation. To the point that we have a tribe of ape men who live, who, by the way, are all Arab?
They're kind of fucking Arab, question mark.
Why? Like, yeah. Like, but not like in any kind of subtle way, or not even in like a way that like a Bourne movie would show you an Arab character.
No.
This is like
silk shirts and like and
scimitars.
Golden scimitars and big belt buckles are
like Alibaba and the 40 caricatures.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just this far from being Arab.
It's as if they looked at the film and went, you know, with all that extra hair we glued to them, they kind of look more brown.
We should make them Arab ape character mutants.
Which is so much more racist than if they'd had them speak with, like, accents. Where they were just like, oh, no, Akbar! Like, that would have been less racist than just the assumption that if you are slightly more brown, you're obviously Arab, which is the presumption this movie is laboring under.
You were at one point, you mentioned the fact that you wanted to rub him and see if he would give you three wishes.
I did. I was like, he's got this giant, like, it's not even a belt buckle. It's a fucking serving dish in the middle of his navel. And I'm like, is that what, hold on, wait. What? And in the meantime, when we say they're ripping off Planet of the Apes, I mean they literally are using the same makeup as the Planet of the Apes.
And several shots. There's a point where several of the characters who are friends with Big Ape are laughing. And it's like, wow. And then there's a moment where fake Plissken says, get your damn hands off of
her.
And
then stops. And I was like, oh, you're going to stop short of saying you damn dirty ape.
He stopped short.
Are you kidding me?
But you hear it in your head.
Are you kidding me?
You hear it in your head. You hear you damn dirty ape. And you know that that's exactly what was in their head. Like, literally, they were just taking their favorite American films from the last 15 years and stitching them together into, as you mentioned, a Frankenstein of a movie.
That's exactly what it is.
This is a movie that really, really wants to have a soul.
Yeah.
It tries very hard because Michael Sopcu, they try to make fake Plissken into a hero, despite the fact that they've stolen his I don't give a fuck attitude from a movie I will not name.
No.
They continue to have him do the heroic thing at every point. They are watching as Shorty is being chased by these guys, and they put themselves and their lives on the line and get captured to save Shorty. And then when they're captured by the Uraks, he, you know, Michael Sopcu plays a brilliant stratagem to try to get them to save Giada, the beautiful blonde Italian girl who he keeps exchanging, you know, fateful glances with. He keeps doing the right thing despite not giving a fuck about anybody. And this movie really wants you to care. And then it gets to the third act.
The third act.
We've got Shorty.
Yeah.
We've got not a cyborg, Ratchet.
Right.
We've got Michael Sopcu.
Right.
We've got gorgeous Giada. Mm. We've got Rape Ape, a.k.a. Big Ape.
Yes. Which, by the way, we're calling him Rape Ape because at a certain
point...
We're not there yet?
We're not there yet. All right. We're in the third act.
All right.
Shorty actually happens to know where this girl is.
The last fertile woman.
The last fertile woman. As it turns out, the last fertile woman was the daughter of a professor from a New York college who actually figured out what the effects of radiation were going to be on women and put his daughter into hibernation and has spent her entire life hibernating in a Michael Jackson-esque sleeping chamber where she is sleeping in there so that she can be protected from the radiation, so her uterus is awesome. So this is what they find this girl. Shorty knows where she is. They go, they find her, and as it turns out, Rape Ape falls in love.
Yeah, and her father, the great Professor Bernie Sanders, decides he's dead, but he has...
In a chair.
He has put his daughter into a state of hibernation. So what? From the Pan-American Federation's perspective, they're going to take her in, they're going to harvest all her eggs, and they're going to create 500, you know, new uncontaminated people.
Out of presumably her and Michael Sopcu?
I don't know. I really don't know. But
they do kind of allude to that.
That
there's going to be some Sopcu love going on.
But so here's the problem is that they're stuck in this tunnel with the sarcophagus of this hibernating last fertile woman on the planet.
Sleeping Beauty.
And they've got to find a way.
This is important because they allude to the fact that she's a fairy tale character.
Which is made all the more relevant by the fact that much like a lot of the Grimm's Brothers fairy tales, some dark ass shit happens.
Which is about to fucking happen.
And so they're trying to formulate a way to get out of the city with the Uraks closing in on them and basically having them surrounded. And while they're figuring this out, Big Ape runs...
Hold on.
Wait.
We kind of skipped the...
I'm sure we've skipped a lot.
No. We really haven't. I mean, that's kind of the magic of this movie. We've skipped a lot, but haven't. We've saved enough for while people are like, this isn't a real movie. These guys are making this shit up. These guys have been drinking all night making up a movie.
This movie is part of their delirium tremens.
Yes. No. Before we get to Rape Ape.
Rape Ape.
Holiday Road.
Yeah, they discover that
there is one remaining vehicle that is in pristine condition that can be driven, and it happens to look exactly, I shit you not, exactly like the Griswold family truckster.
It is a fucking wagon if ever you've seen one. It is one of those old school fucking wagons.
And I think the fact that they're also excited about it because it is the last car that operates on the planet is
that is in
so
pristine
hilarious.
Condition and has a full tank, as he
so
mentions.
So hilarious that it's the fucking Griswold family truckster. So they're trying to figure out how they're going to get the girl into this car.
Into the Griswold family truckster.
Into the Griswold family truckster and get out of New York. And meanwhile, Big Ape is like, he's alone with the corpse, essentially. And
the girl in hibernation.
The girl in hibernation. Sleeping Beauty.
The beautiful woman in hibernation who the camera lovingly positions itself over her breasts.
Yeah, like the date rape fairy tale that Snow White is.
Because she's clearly not a 13-year-old girl. She is clearly a blossoming.
I'm sorry,
woman.
If you don't see Sleeping Beauty as a cautionary tale about date rape, then you are not reading that story correctly.
Blossoming woman. She is a blossoming woman who the camera just happens to linger lovingly upon
and
her breast.
Here's the craziest fucking part of the whole
thing.
This
is the craziest part of the whole thing?
Is that one of the most human moments in this entire film is Big Ape caressing a woman who is in hibernation and saying, "You will receive my seed." I can't really articulate it, but I'm telling you, if you watch this movie, this is one of the, because you
no,
really
no,
feel
this
for
is,
a guy,
you're not wrong,
whose entire race is going to be wiped out if they take her away and breed her with the more optimal specimens. His mutant ape people will be completely extinct. There is a loving sort of like survival of the fittest Darwinism moment to what he is saying.
There's a legitimate passion there. He is he becomes immediately infatuated with this woman. He immediately thinks about the perpetuation of his own species, his own mutant species, and then proceeds to love her as he knows how.
Yes.
While she is asleep, which may or may not be, in the more modern terms, referred to as rape ape.
He does rape ape. Yeah, that's why we were both like, rape ape, rape ape.
He does
some off screen oingo boingo.
He does some off screen oingo boingo with our sleeping girl.
To which, and when he came out of that tent, I couldn't help but be like, "Well, the thing is that she is totally still in hibernation.
Well, you characters were taking the metal sheets and like putting them on the Griswold family vehicle. I was having the pudding pops to the woman who was then gonna receive my seed.
I put my damn dirty hands on her because I'm a filthy ape.
So, like, he literally, like, he goes and he knocks her up while they're strapping, chaining, rather. Yeah. Like, in every other movie, you would have a montage of people with a welding torch
creating, like, the dreadnought.
Creating the dreadnought. Instead, they literally just chain chunks of metal to a fucking wagon,
which is hilarious to me because if
a
you watch
station wagon, they are chaining hunks of metal to a station wagon so that they can drive through a tunnel, not a bridge.
Tunnel, not a bridge.
That is mined.
That is mined very much like a movie we won't mention.
The movie that this movie rips off that we have not mentioned, or I have not mentioned, that someone else kind of mentioned,
kind of mentioned.
Totally not ripping off that movie by having a climax in which they drive with a vehicle across a bridge or through a tunnel.
I think
it happens to be mine.
I looked at you one point and I was like, if they started playing swing music right now, would you be the least bit surprised?
I would have not been surprised.
I'm just saying, but
I would have been surprised because I've seen this movie many, many times.
Right. No, that would.
And then if swing music just showed up, it would be like, what the fuck? How have I missed this 12 times?
And the thing is, at the beginning of the movie, there are souped up, really elaborate death machine cars.
Yeah.
But that's not what we get at the end of the movie.
No. We get a station wagon with hunks of metal, literally sheets of metal chained to them.
They may as well have been stapled to it. Like, it's such a hack job.
It's so half-assed. It's kind of amazing that, like, it would, like, it's literally so half-assed. You imagine that when it dries off, it slides out the back, and it's like, dude,
what
the fuck was that?
Well,
I thought it was chained on. Didn't you have a welding torch? Did you see a montage of a welding torch?
No, there was no welding torch montage. That is absolutely for certain.
Even Rocky had a montage.
So we get to the end of the film where they have somehow
made... Whoa.
What?
Did they get through the magical tunnel that wasn't a bridge?
They got
that was mined?
My favorite part about, here's my favorite figurative part about the ending of this movie is that as they're weaving through the quote-unquote mines, they look like cones, and it looks like they're weaving through all of these cones, which if you think about copyright laws in Italy, had to be like them weaving through all of the blatant like references that they had to alter only thusly.
Here's what we've missed. And this is what is muy importante that we've missed. What we've missed is at this point in the movie, several characters have made very huge sacrifices.
Sure.
Shorty was captured.
He gave himself up to prevent our other heroes from being captured.
And when they were going to interrogate him, threw himself
onto spikes.
Onto exposed spikes.
Yeah.
And Rape Ape.
Yeah.
Big Ape, as you keep referring to him, but I don't know why call him Big Ape in the movie. He actually...
You mean actor George Eastman? Bullshit.
George Eastman.
I am American George Eastman.
He gets shot during his sequence of trying to protect Melissa, our Sleeping Beauty. And he gets a noble death as well. So Shorty and Big Ape get these noble deaths.
Oh, and we've completely missed the fact that Elias Koteas lookalike, who has the map of New York in his head.
Oh, he was killed terribly.
He also had a noble death because he was like, you guys go ahead, I'm already dying, and then takes on the entire army of what looks like Oakland Raiders linebackers by himself.
On horseback.
And he says over and over again the favorite insult in this entire movie, which is that he comes around the corner, bastards! Goes back. Bastards! And until they shoot him dead.
By the way, bastards is the
preeminent insult in this
whenever
film.
Anybody is shooting at someone else, they scream bastard.
Bastards. And when Shorty dies, right before he dies, he's
bastards!
Like, bastards! And he kills himself. So you're right. There's a lot of nobility. There's a lot of noble death
there's
in this film.
There's a crazy amount of nobility in this film. For a film that is such... A blatant
that was made for half of one day's craft service budget on Deadpool is pretty lofty with its ideas
movie,
of nobility,
which has no respect for any kind of laws or concept of intellectual property whatsoever. They really do throw a lot of nobility into this third act where all of our characters are strangely noble. Even the asshole knockoff from a movie I will not mention.
Yes,
because
you're right.
In the superior movie, and it will be referred to as the far superior movie.
Yes.
That guy is a double crossing dick.
Yes.
In this movie, no. Like in this movie, the guy who's the double crossing dick who you show up, like he pulls the double cross in the beginning of the movie, and then at the end of the movie he shows up and you're like, ha ha, I'm totally gonna fuck you over. He's like, oh no dude, I'm totally dying of cancer. The doctor's like, give me 3 months. So you didn't ever actually have a seat on the ship to Alpha Centauri, but since I'm dying, I'm gonna give you my seat because I'm actually, as it turns out, a good dude. Cause like everybody at the end of this movie turns out to be a good dude.
Let me offer a counterpoint. Something that I
offer
think-
me the counterpoint.
Is, I think, the fake Pliskins analog of ripping the center out of the cassette tape at the end of the movie that we shall not name.
The movie we shall not name.
Is that he doesn't tell anyone that Sleeping Beauty
has been knocked up by Rape Ape.
Pregnant.
No. That is
his ripping the center out of the tape moment.
Except that
is that his
he's not like it's not like,
this.
Like it, we never get the information that like giving birth to Rape Ape's seed is going to destroy the
but he knows that he knows fully well that it is exactly the opposite of what the organization that hired him wants.
I agree. No. I don't think that's wrong, but I think that's like the most half-assed thing about this movie, because literally at that point, like, it's been like, hey, remember that short dude you saved? Yeah, he actually never lied to you, and then he sacrificed himself to save your life. You know the guy that raped the girl? Yeah, he sacrificed himself to save your life. The cyborg? Oh, yeah, it turns out he was actually a cyborg.
This question I have. What did it fucking matter that he was a cyborg? Because
we had to get rid of him as a character because he couldn't go on the ship.
Okay, but my whole thing is this. At the end of the movie, our fucking fake Pliskin hero is like, yeah, the sonic waves didn't affect you, and this didn't I think you're a cyborg. And as soon as he says that, Ratchet attacks him. But the whole thing is this. Ratchet has been instrumental in his survival throughout the whole movie to the point that I'm like, what does it goddamn matter at this point after you finish the mission that you even call him out on that? And why, after he's been called out, is Ratchet like, well, now I have to kill him?
No,
if your mission from day one was to make sure that fake Plissken died, why do you wait until you are called out to even attempt to kill him when by your inaction, by the second fucking law of robotics, according to Asimov, you could have had him killed hours ago? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, and this is the thing, is like, it gets to the, this is the point where any other movie would be like, hey, it turns out you're a cyborg, and I have this like inborn hate of cyborgs that comes from the first act of the movie, but you're really cool, and you had an eye patch, which made you different, and you totally saved my life and totally faked being human during all these different scenes to save my life. So, dude, we're cool. And it's like, no, we must fight to the death because it's the third act. We're going to fight to the death in the desert. And then, you know, fake Plissken wins and beats out the cyborg who totally saved his life like half a dozen fucking times in the movie. At least. Like, Jesus Christ. We have to watch this movie again just to count the number of times Ratchet saves fucking Percival.
Which, once again, begs the question,
death.
Why the fuck does it matter that he's a cyborg except for the fact that fake Plissken doesn't like cyborgs? Get the fuck over it. This one has saved you. This should have been the moment in any other film. This would have been the golden opportunity for the screenwriter to be like, oh, see, this is kind of his like coming around and growing as a person because he didn't like cyborgs, but now this one has saved his life so many times.
Not even a little
bit. He's finally come around and like, no, there's no growth. There's no character arc. What the fuck is wrong with you if that's what you're looking for in a movie called Escape? After
God damn it, drink again. Drink again, damn you. You keep blowing this. We were never going to mention that name. This is after the fall of New York. There is no other movie.
After the fall of New York. In 3 years, guys, we're gonna face
this. We're 3 years away from after the fall of New York. No, you know, and here's the thing about that, is that this movie wants to have a heart.
It's
so bad.
It's the Tin Man.
So bad.
This is the movie equivalent of the Tin Man character in Wizard of Oz.
It keeps blowing it. And this brings it all around to the weirdest thing about this movie. As much as we have kicked this movie in the balls for like an hour, we love this shit.
It's so watchable.
It's so watchable.
Why is it so watchable?
Why do we love this terrible, terrible movie that feels like an hour and a half of filler? It's like a 2-hour movie in 90 minutes, and yet we cannot stop watching it. We cannot stop loving it.
Well, and I think it's because the shamelessness of it creates a mythology, creates a world where, because it doesn't play by any rules, you cannot form expectations.
You can't. This movie never, even though I've seen it a dozen times, it continues to surprise me.
Yeah.
I always forget how crazy it gets at points where it's just like, oh God, how did I forget about all the people being murdered by flamethrowers? Like, I immediately just jump in my head. This movie starts off with the death. What did you call it? It's not the death race. The death derby.
Yeah.
This movie begins with the death derby. And I always forget about people being murdered by flamethrowers.
Which, by the way, don't show up again for the entire movie, I noticed.
No. We don't see flamethrowers again in the rest of the movie.
But flamethrowers are a staple of this genre. Very much so.
Well, it's almost like we made a post-apocalyptic film without a flamethrower. What were you thinking?
Exactly.
We're Italian. Have you not seen every other Italian knockoff film ever made? We put a flamethrower in it. Like 1990s Bronx Warrior had one, and the only thing that the sequel has to it is a flamethrower.
Yeah.
Like nothing else has anything in common but a flamethrower. Like that's literally the point to the second movie is we in fact built a truck with a flamethrower on it. That's how committed we were to the idea. Yeah, the sequel. We love the first one. We don't love the second one.
Are you talking about Escape from the Bronx? Which, by the way, is called Escape from the Bronx.
Yes.
Which is
Escape from the Bronx, which is not a knockoff of any movie that we can figure out.
It's not. In fact,
because 1992 Bronx Warriors is definitely not a ripoff of any other movie. But Escape from the Bronx is definitely not a ripoff of a movie we have not mentioned.
No. I would argue 1990 Bronx Warriors is a ripoff of The Warriors. and maybe Escape from the Bronx sounds like more of a ripoff of the movie that this film is ripping off than this film sounds like the movie it's ripping off.
But it's not actually ripping off.
Oh, wait, you think After the Fall of New York isn't ripping off the movie that
No. I think Escape from the Bronx is not nearly
a
ripoff.
You're right. No, you're right. And that's what's so crazy about it, is that it has a title that sounds more like a ripoff of the film that this movie is ripping off, but it's not ripping that movie off. I've just gone cross-eyed.
Yeah, and everybody else is like, what the fuck is Escape from the Bronx?
Well, you
Escape
should...
Escape from the Bronx
you
is a sequel to 1992 Bronx Warriors, which is one of our first...
Yeah,
podcast.
One of our very first podcasts.
If you have
podcasts.
Not listened to our podcast of 1992 Bronx Warriors, you really should, because we love 1992 Bronx Warriors.
1990 Bronx Warriors is a fantastic movie. Go listen to our episode, then track down the sequel. I think it's just called Escape from the Bronx. And then watch After the Fall of New York, 2019 After the Fall of New York, which is
a ripoff of a movie we won't mention.
We won't mention. And is also a ripoff of a lot of films you may not expect.
Dude, this is what we love about this movie. And this is what is so crazy about this stupid movie. It rips off like a dozen different films.
It really does.
Shamelessly.
Without
shame and without a budget. Like, this movie has no budget.
Yeah.
But it tries.
This is a movie, and this is the sincerity, and this is what I love about movies like this, and this is why irony has no place here, is that for all of the $12.50 that this movie cost, every cent of that, every copper penny of that $12.50 is on the screen. There is a sincerity to how much they tried to make this look like a big budget movie, despite not having any of the means to accomplish it.
Yeah. No, this movie at times has these wonderful long shots where they're like, we're going to put the camera up in this building and we're going to shoot it down at these characters, and then we're going to be running through and we're going to be shooting smoke through there, and we've laid trash all over the place, which you mentioned. They're like, man, trash is all over this movie. And I'm like,
no,
this is the wrong post-apocalyptic Italian film.
Ayo. That's a joke six people are going to get, by the way.
And I love all six of you. Any of you who get that joke, know that I am giving you a verbal hug right now, because you guys are my people. come on. Tell me they're not your people.
They're totally my people. I also love that of the $12.50 spent on this movie, I'm pretty sure 10 of it was spent on costumes, which is such an Italian thing. Like, I love the fact that you're watching an Italian ripoff and going, okay, all the best designers in the world are Italian, and most of the money in this film went to the costumes, and you can totally, totally tell that from frame one.
So, yeah, speaking of the wardrobe of this movie, we haven't really gone into the fact that Michael Sopcu's jacket may well be one of the most sensible pieces of post-apocalyptic gear.
Which is only baffling when you look at it, because initially you're going to be like, what is Olivia Newton-John's big brother doing in this movie?
Well, I mean, he's got the mullet in the pre-mullet era.
He's got the headband. It's as if the real Pliskin, before they feathered his hair.
What real Pliskin?
Regular Pliskin. Reg Pliskin. I can't not say it. Come on.
You talking about fake Pliskin's originator?
Yes. The proto Pliskin.
Proto Pliskin.
Yes.
Yes. So he's got the mullet. He's got the headband. He doesn't have any eye patch whatsoever, because that's what Ratchet has. Ratchet, sure. Not a cyborg. No, but he has this leather jacket, which is a studded leather jacket with arms that aren't leather. They're chainmail.
They are chain.
He has a chainmail armed leather jacket that you look at it and you're like, that is about the most 90s goofy, like, mall ninja bullshit I've ever seen in my life. And then at the same time, you think about it and you're like, well, leather is really good at protecting against sharp objects. And if you were in a fight in a post-apocalyptic wasteland against people with sharp objects, or blunt objects for that matter, having chainmail of some sort on your arms so that you could deflect any of these attacks would make a whole lot of fucking sense. So you look at this jacket and you're like, this is not the dumbest thing I've ever seen. This actually might be the single greatest post-apocalyptic piece of gear.
Can I just hope...
When they released the Blu-ray for this film, there is a pull quote from Junk Food Cinema that says, "Not the dumbest thing I've ever seen."
Which would appropriately describe this film.
Yeah.
This film is not the dumbest movie I've ever seen by far. There's so much love that went into this stupid, retarded fucking thing.
There's so much love that went into it.
Like, seriously, they were, you could tell that they were trying to make something good out of what was clearly a bullshit knockoff.
Yeah.
They were hoping to confuse people. The cover of the fucking VHS was a knockoff of the fucking movie that I will not name. Yeah. Like, and frankly, the cover is why I love this film so much. I saw this film on video stores as a kid constantly, because it was one of those movies that was famously sold dirt cheap on VHS. And so every video store on the planet had it. And when you walked into the science fiction section, if you went into a video store in the 80s, they had After the Fall of New York.
And they figured out long before the asylum existed, if you started your movie with a number, it was at the first position on that shelf.
Although, but that's the Italian version. The American version was always After the Fall of New York.
Really?
Which was an A at the time in which there wasn't a lot of... It was After the Fall of New York, followed by Alien. I mean, this is the 80s we're talking about. So you would go, it's Alien. And right next to it is this movie with this guy with a mullet and a fucking, you know, leather headband holding this gun with a needle on it that said After the Fall of New York. Oh, my friends have talked about that movie. After the Fall of New York. Yes, that's a really good movie. And that was very much that is what the 80s was.
And for fans of this genre, what's remarkable about this movie is it accomplishes all the things we've mentioned without featuring Fred the Hammer Williamson or Donald Pleasance.
It pulled that off amazingly.
That's remarkable because at least one of those two guys was in every other fucking Italian knockoff we're ever going to talk about.
How amazing would this have been if Big Ape had been played
by Fred the Hammer Williamson? I feel like it would have only been... it would have been less
racist. The president of the Pan American Empire was played by Donald Pleasance.
I feel like having Fred the Hammer Williamson play a character called Big Ape, considering the context of this movie, would have been less racist
than what they did the Arab version of what they went with. That's what's kind of amazing, because this movie is so kind of racist.
Well, they're like, let's kill him. Let's kill Shorty because he's a halfling. Like, wait, what? Like, there's a tribe called the Needlers that basically are called that because they use these needle staffs to kill rats to eat to live.
And then the person who kills the most gets to rape one of the women.
Yeah, so weird.
Like, that's...
And then Italian...
Like, this is the kind of movie we're talking about. Like, this, yeah. There's so much weirdness put into the mythology of this movie. Like, by the time you get done with this movie, you're like, I understand this world so much, and I kind of want this world to die. Like, you'd realize why the world... This movie is so nihilistic. And it's so nihilistic for a reason, because its view of humanity is so dark. Like, one of its heroes is a fucking rapist.
Yeah.
Like, that's how dark this movie gets. Like, everything about this movie is wrong and yet right at the same time. And you can't help but watch at just how masterfully fucked up this entire movie is.
And that is why we love it, because
that's why we love it.
It is one of those rare situations where observing the train wreck is so much more satisfying than that train getting to its destination on time.
And the train doesn't get to its destination on time. Because this movie, there's moments, I know how many times you've watched this movie, and yet there were times, you know, as much as you love this movie, you were checking your phone.
I was like, what the fuck? What is happening right now? And that's...
You're just like, I need to check my phone for a second, because I know that this 3 minutes is literally these two guys wrestling around in the dirt.
Well, and part of it was, I'll be honest with you, part of the research I do for these episodes is I look at the IMDb trivia. There's nothing!
Nothing
on this fucking movie!
This movie doesn't exist compared to everyone else. No. Like, for us, this movie is a milestone.
Yeah.
To the rest of the world, this movie never existed.
And we have to, like... We have to theorize trivia. Like, one of the things that I thought was interesting that you theorized was about the sound effects.
Oh, there is laser blasts in this?
Mm-hmm.
That, it's not a theory.
No, it is a theory because it's backed up by nothing.
First of all, I will say that I have watched Flash Gordon more times than anyone else in this planet has any right to fucking watch Flash Gordon.
That is not the theory, but go on.
But there's a sound effect. There's a point. Which reminds me, we haven't gotten. Yes, you're remembering all of a sudden you have not gotten to let neck lasers.
No, I haven't gotten to neck lasers,
there are laser guns in this that the sound effects is straight out of fucking Flash Gordon.
Yes.
Like, I know which two scenes that sound effect came out of. There is a sound effect in this movie that was taken out of Flash Gordon.
But here's the theory. Here's where the theory comes into effect.
Well, all of a sudden, when you're watching the credits of this movie,
there is a De Laurentiis.
There's a De Laurentiis, Roberto De Laurentiis, in this movie.
Who, by the way, produced Dino De Laurentiis, of course, producing Flash Gordon in 1980. So that's where the theory comes in, is that we think that this not only it's not an accident that this sounds like the sound effects from Flash Gordon. It is entirely ripped off from Flash Gordon, which may be in this family's catalog. But yes, neck lasers.
Talk about neck lasers, because you mentioned it very early in the you like hinted at it.
Yeah,
and like there are people who are listening going, what the fuck was he talking about?
They
like
never got
the neck lasers.
Our heroes are escaping the one location I'm pretty sure this movie had, which was some big factory.
Some oil refinery.
They're escaping, and one of the guards lifts up his helmet, and from the VHS we were watching, it looks like, here's the sequence that it looks like happens. He lifts up his helmet, raises his head, and a laser is fired at our heroes from the vicinity of his Adam's apple.
I would argue that it was actually from the triangle necklace that was hanging around his neck,
which
that was on many of the characters that they never activate their neck lasers.
Which, again, if that's the case, why weren't the other necklaces at any point in the movie used for that exact same purpose?
I cannot explain to you why neck lasers were not used.
I want to see the Blu-ray of this film so I can see exactly where that laser originated from, because at this point in my life, Cargill, that is my who shot first. I want to know the origin of
who
this
shot
goddamn
JFK?
Laser.
The neck laser.
Back and to the neck. I want to know who fired this goddamn laser and from whence.
And we're going to own that DVD, that Blu-ray, very shortly, isn't it?
Immediately.
Because it was just recently, like, announced, wasn't it?
It was. And I think we are the two people who would own this.
Except it was so recently announced, it was announced after we announced that we were going to talk about it on the show.
That's entirely true.
And I had a couple of friends going, you're not going to believe what they're releasing on Blu-ray.
I like to believe it was because of us.
They're releasing it
junkies,
on Blu-ray.
Junkies, all of you, I would like to believe that is because of us announcing we were doing it, and then four people buying the VHS on Amazon. They're going, oh, there is a market for this.
Okay, see, this is something we haven't discussed.
I want to believe.
What if there is some guy out there that all he does is listen to podcasts and reads blogs and goes, someone's talking about After the Fall in New York. We could sell 1,000 copies of After the Fall in New York, and we could buy it for like 50 cents. Like, nobody cares about the rights to After the Fall of New York, because it's just a knockoff of a movie that even Cargill won't mention it's a knockoff of. Like, it is After the Fall of New York. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Of course we're going to buy the rights to that. Or it's one of those things where we're just like, well, dude, why haven't we talked about After the Fall of New York yet?
Yeah.
We got to talk about this movie. And someone's like, holy shit, really? Because we literally bought the rights to that like 6 months ago.
I want to believe.
And nobody cares that that movie exists except you guys, which we were hoping you would do an episode after it came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
so you could talk about how great a transfer it was and how half the plot was actually located in the Blu-ray.
I want to believe that if I make no other impact on this planet, on this world that we live in, that I may have been partially responsible for the Blu-ray release of After the Fall of New York. Do you understand how excited I will be for the entirety of my life as a carbon-based life form that I had somehow influenced the release of After the Fall of New York on Blu-ray?
How awesome would it be if we watched that Blu-ray and we're like, holy shit. There's actually some really interesting stuff going on in this movie that was just cut off by the VHS transfer by someone who didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, literally, look at those backgrounds. Look at what that character's doing over to the side. Holy shit, as it turns out, that character who's making out with our character who's supposed to be the torturer is actually in this scene,
yeah.
Which totally makes this movie make sense.
Oh my God, if there's a director's cut... Oh my God, Cargill, if there's a director's
Why
cut...
Why did you just say those words to me? You do realize they just got erect.
If Sergio Martino... As Martin Dolman, by the way.
Martin Dolman. Director of After the Fall of New York. Not a knockoff of a certain film you may have heard of that was released a year or two ago.
That we will not mention. But if Sergio Martina, alias Martin Dolman, does a director's commentary at least, oh my fucking Lord in heaven,
buy that goddamn
Blu-ray.
It's an Italian knockoff. Those guys were like 87 when
Cargill,
they made this movie.
There is no way that actually he is still alive. July 19th, 1938, born in Rome.
What was his last movie?
His last movie was in, he did something for TV in 2012. Yeah, he might still be alive. We have got
to
find.
He totally could have reelected Obama.
Sergio, if you're listening to this, get in touch with us. We want to talk to you. And junkies, do whatever you can to track down this movie. When it comes out on Blu-ray, buy it. If you can't wait that long, find the VHS on Amazon, buy it. Dust off your VCR, play this movie. It is so goddamn fucking bizarre.
It is a movie you cannot believe. Even after you have watched it, even after you have watched it with us, you still can't believe this is a thing that really exists.
Yes,
it is a movie that it's like, wow, you ripped off every movie you've seen up until this point. Like, literally, there are shots that they stole and reshot for $12 out of fucking Star Wars. Yes. Like, literally, every movie they'd seen up to this point that was genre in any way, shape, or form, they ripped off for this fucking movie. And it's...
And they did it without a conscience.
Without a conscience.
Yes.
And then they added nobility to every fucking character in this movie. Like, even the girl who exists to be pretty ends up dying for love. Because love is important, and know that I am dying for love, and know that kiss me with love.
First of all, she dies for bullshit. The reason she actually dies is part and parcel to something we've already talked about. It's total bullshit. But again, this movie is so much fun to observe on the level of, like, well, you know what? It's like observing a natural wonder, like Old Faithful or the Grand Canyon. You just can't understand how the forces align to create the thing that your eyes are currently witnessing, and that is After the Fall of New York.
You do realize this may be the longest version of this show we've ever recorded
any episode we've ever done before,
and yet we barely scratched the surface of how this movie is. Like, this is literally one of the weirdest episodes of our own show we've ever done, because we cannot explain how amazing and how awesome this movie is. This movie really, you know, we talk about it and we've had a lot of fun with it, but this movie is so at the core of why you and I are such good friends, because so many other people have watched this movie with us and written it off and forgotten that this film exists.
Yes.
And this film to us, there's just a certain magic to it that we connect with, that is what we connect with to so many movies. Like, this movie wants to be great, knowing full well that it's ripping off far greater things, but it's not half-assing it.
No.
This movie doesn't half-ass it. When it fails because it fucking fails.
Yeah, like, for all of its flim-flammery and getting people into the theater by tricking them into thinking they're seeing the movie that this is ripping off,
yeah.
Once they have the people in that theater, they are so dedicated to giving those people an experience, a cinematic experience like they have never had before, yeah. Even though they've already had it 6 or 7 times before.
Yeah, no, and like right down to the final shot of this movie, where this final shot of this movie, you're just like, wait, is our hero literally taking off on a spaceship to Alpha Centauri, to a planet he doesn't know fucking exists, and he's standing in front of a girl who got raped by a fucking Planet of the Apes character? Who is just fucking sitting there, coming out of a coma.
McDowell?
And then she just looks, they have this touching moment between them where it's like, you have no idea what just happened, but you totally have an idea of what just happened.
Right.
Because this is a deep moment between two characters. And you're just like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? It is so amazing.
Which is a question you will ask often and get no answer to.
You'll never get an answer to that. And yet you'll have to watch it again because you can't believe you watched it the first time.
Yes. And I can't believe that we have gone 80 minutes, almost the entire runtime of this film, talking about this film, and we still have barely scratched the surface of this film.
But normally we do like 47-50 minutes a week, right?
And we
not this week.
Yeah,
because
so,
this is the movie, because frankly this movie is above all the origination of this entire podcast. For those of you handful of people who have been with us from the beginning, those of you who have come along the way, those of you who are there now who are like, wow, I can't believe this is a thing, but I listen to it once a week.
to Neil, who somehow still publishes this.
To Neil, who somehow still publishes this. This is the movie that really kind of forged our friendship in a very weird way, because you and I are the only people I know that even remember this film exists. and it's a film that we love despite the fact that everything wrong with it is wrong. Like, we were making fun of it as we were watching it, but we didn't stop loving it.
No.
Because it really is one of those movies you're just like, yeah, this is stupid.
But I'm still happy to exist on a planet where this film
this
is a reality.
This movie exists.
Yes.
And yeah, we can go rape, and then you can be like, fuck, you beat me to that. And yet at the same time, it's like, well, we're not the first person to make that joke,
no,
because I'm sure somebody in the 1980s was like, rape ape, because somebody paid to see this in a theater and it wasn't us. And God bless them for doing it.
Absolutely.
I don't have time to jaw with anyone who won't identify himself.
Well, guys, that brings us finally to the junk food pairing of this episode.
It better be fucking South African wine, because
I think apart from the South African wine, I think what this movie really calls for in terms of a junk food pairing is a Central Florida Chinese buffet.
Jesus Christ.
And I have a reason for
Florida
this.
Florida man.
Florida man. Now, because if you have ever been to one of the most podunk cities in any part of these United States, but most especially in the central region of Florida,
Wow. You
know that a Chinese buffet does not mean in that part of the country what a Chinese buffet means in most places.
No.
In that all of the food that is served there is sort of a recreation of what should be Chinese food.
It's like, yeah, that should be chicken. It's gator, but it's supposed to be chicken.
You say Kung Pao chicken, this is human meat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it looks and smells kind of like what you associate with Chinese food on a buffet. But at the same time, you will scoot down to the left of the buffet, and there will be pigs in a blanket. There will be pizza slices. There will be chicken fingers, all of which kind of taste like the food they purport to be, but aren't really that food. Much like this film takes from so many different sources.
So many.
Barely in an oddball ways that you're like,
I don't think we've even mentioned all of the films this movie rips off.
No, we haven't. But that is why I think a Central Florida Chinese buffet is the perfect junk food pairing for After the Fall of New York, a film that borrows from so many sources and
especially a film we won't mention,
and does it so poorly that sometimes you're not sure if you're actually being served the thing that is purported to be being served. Boom. Central Florida Chinese buffet.
I'm still going with the South African wine.
Well, that is the junk food pairing of us recording this episode.
This is why we went 85, 90
you know
minutes.
What? You know what? That's the drunk food pairing of our episode, ladies and gentlemen,
is
the South African wine. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have enjoyed.
I love you, Mulder Bosch.
This experimental, you know what? This should be how we record all episodes from here on out.
From here on out, we should just
this
get
is
wasted.
So good. This
like,
is
get
so
drunk
good.
Over at my house and
yes.
just record us like going off. On
I,
the movie
I
for
am
90
not.
Minutes.
I am not kidding, and I want you to commit to this now on air so you can't back out of it.
Damn it. You know what? I have no problem with it. My wife is in the other room going, God damn it, no, never again.
Why won't you people leave?
Never again. Why won't you leave, Brian? Let my husband be
now.
Drunk here alone.
I live here now. If you would like
damn
to hear
it.
More of our show, go back to iTunes and Stitcher for our catalog. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
On the internet.
Really? That's the whole answer?
That was it was your, a special
was
episode,
shorty.
So no, you can find me on facebook.com/massworm, or on twitter.com/massiveworm.
And you are one of the co-writers of Doctor Strange, which comes out when?
November 4th.
Awesome.
Or unless you're, you know, overseas, at which point it's going to come out in late October.
There you go. You can find me online at BriGuySalisbury on the Twitters. On Facebook, I am Brian Salisbury Critic. Like that page, please. And
please.
Please. Yeah. Just generally keep being fans of ours. Keep telling people that you like the show. We really appreciate that. But,
and we really appreciate you guys. You know, we don't say that enough, but really,
junkies!
You know, me and Brian, we do this because we really like hanging out together and we really like hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, ask us how much money we make for doing this.
We make no money doing
no
this.
No money.
We literally do this.
Down on our luck.
Every week for two reasons. We do this because we enjoy hanging out together and it's an excuse to hang out together and bullshit.
Yeah.
And the other reason is because you guys are the people we don't know that we really wish we could.
Yeah.
So those of you out here who are listening to us, that make us a part of your weekly regimen, that listen to us in your ride to work, or listen to us while you're working out, or while you're working at work, you guys fucking rock. You guys totally are why the whole reason, most of the reason we do this. We do this because we do actually enjoy each other's company, and because we enjoy connecting with people like you guys. So I'm really glad you guys are out there, and thank God that you guys are out there, because you are the people we'd be hanging out with when we're not hanging out with each other. So please, for the love of God, keep doing it. And please, if you for some reason listen to this and didn't track down After the Fall of New York, order it. Track it down on YouTube, or track it down wherever it can be found, because literally this movie is the origin of what we do and why we do it.
This is the League of Shadows of junk food cinema.
It is. And it's one of those movies where you're just going to be like, you're going to watch it after we've talked about it, and you're still not going to believe it exists. It's going to be a fantasy in all of our minds, and yet it's going to be a fantasy that we only share together, and other people won't believe it exists. You're going to mention to them that there's a knockoff of a movie that Cargill will not mention aloud, that that is a, you know, you're going to say, I've seen After the Fall of New York, and people are going to be like, what the fuck is that? And you're going to explain it, and they're still not going to believe you, because it is that kind of movie. So please, for the love of God, if you're one of us, watch this movie.
Yes.
Become one with this movie. And join us next week for whatever we talk about next week.
Yes, and if you're one of the people who can claim the victory of finding this movie online, just remember, to the victor goes long life and happiness.
An ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Traveling home for the holidays? Well, with the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on any purchase you make today and every day. And those miles add up to get you closer to that trip home. Every time you pump gas, double miles. Every time you get your nails done, double miles. Or if you're in charge of buying the turkey, yep, double miles. You earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, and then you go. The Capital One Venture Card, the card that takes you there. What's in your wallet?
Capital One Bank USA NA.